I believe that today most practicing attorneys will admit that case law has become a quagmire of conflicting opinions that all too often lead to more confusion than clarity. There are two institutionalized problems with case law that need correction before this disaster called case law can be rectified. The first problem is a general unwillingness on the part of lawyers to challenge existing case law. There are three arguments that can be used to challenge case law. Number one, aver that the circumstances that led to the ruling on a point of law in the previous case are not substantially the same as are at issue in the current case, and therefore the ruling on the point of law in the previous case is not controlling in the current case. And two, aver that the circumstances that led to the ruling on a point of law in the previous case are the same as in the current case, but that the previous court simply ruled in error concerning the issue of law in question. And three, show that what has been passing for case law is actually nothing more than obiter dictum. Now, obiter dictum is the word meaning that it's the judge's opinion, his personal opinion, not the ruling of the court. And most of the times, obiter dictum, you get a lot of that from bartenders at night. They have plenty of dictum and obiter dictum. And it's no more valid than the judges. Stated plainly, most lawyers are just too lazy to tackle option number one. This sort of argument takes time and effort to put forth and is rarely seen except in high-dollar corporate legal battles. In most courtrooms, case law is never challenged, even when it's not terribly applicable. Option two is basically a dead on arrival. Lawyers will almost never aver to one court that the decision of a previous court is just flat wrong. Even on the rare occasions that an attorney is motivated enough to make the argument, the court is virtually never willing to overturn a fellow judge's ruling on a point of law. We get the impression that, like the aristocracy of old, today's judges consider it implied to publicly declare another learned and honorable judge to be wrong. Option number three would require an attorney to actually read the court's decision, and sometimes all the briefs, motions, and other filings from the very beginning of the case. Reading previously decided cases is very time-consuming, and at times exceedingly boring. Neither of these are the kinds of things with which attorneys like to involve themselves. For most attorneys, that kind of arduous effort ended on the day that they graduated law school. The second significant problem with case law is that while many judges are willing to follow it blindly, other judges seem unwilling to follow the precedent of their state Supreme Courts or the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court, even when the issue before the court is well settled by the higher courts. While the motives of some judges may be speculated upon by laypersons and lawyers alike, the solution is cheered by the public and dreaded by the bar associations. Judges who disregard the case law that is clearly and correctly applicable to the matter before them should be removed from the bench by a panel of citizens. Their pensions should be forfeited upon removal, and judgments should be issued against them for any injury done to their victims. One of the greatest stumbling blocks for the American public in understanding the laws their respective legislatures enact is that laws use words in a different manner than we do in common speech. There are two kinds of language that are primarily used in law. One is words, just as we use in common speech, and the other is terms, which can be substantially different than we use in common speech. Words are just that, words. They are presumed to be used in their ordinary manner, and they are subject to the plain meaning rule when interpreting a statute. Their meaning must be sought through common English dictionaries of the era in which the statute was written. In the absence of any clear contrary intent by the legislature, the meaning found in these dictionaries is the sole meaning that must be given to the word. Terms are another matter. Terms appear no different to the layperson than words. The difference is that terms are not subject to the plain meaning rule because the legislature has provided its own definition of the term being used. Where the legislature has provided its own definition, the ordinary English dictionary must be thrown out the window. The definition given to the term by the legislature controls the meaning completely. Seeking out the definition section applicable to the text that you are reading can identify the meaning of the terms. Unfortunately, this may not always be a straightforward proposition as one might imagine. Most codes provide a section that gives definitions that are generally applicable throughout the entire code. However, any of the definitions given for the entire code are subject to be redefined in any given subtitle, chapter, section, subsection, or clause. Anytime a term is redefined for a specific subtitle, chapter, section, subsection, or clause, that redefinition of the term takes precedence within that subtitle, chapter, section, subsection, or clause over the general definition provided for the entire code. Of course, to make matters more confusing, anytime a term is redefined for use in a subtitle, chapter, section, subsection, or clause, it can be redefined again and again as you move through the subtitle to chapter, chapter to section to clause, etc. In other words, you always have to be on your toes to make sure that you know the definitions that apply to the exact text you're reading. Although words of art are often placed by the layperson in the same category as terms, they are not the same thing. Words of art are words or phrases that are particular to specific technologies, sciences, arts, and professions, etc., and generally do not have the same meaning, or any meaning at all, outside their own field. One example of this would be the medical word orthopod. The word orthopod is generally used within the medical community to indicate a person who has surgical training and experience in arthroscopy. Outside the medical field, orthopod has no meaning whatsoever. While terms are often used by the politicians and lawyers to mask the true intentions or application of legislation from the general public, especially in tax law, words of art are proper and necessary parts of effective communication in the legal arena. At this juncture, I would like to warn the uninitiated student that politicians, lawyers, government employees, officers, and judges do not really care what the law says. You heard me correctly. Burn it into your memory. It will save you a lot of angry days and sleepless nights. There is a vast difference between what the law says and how the system works. Here's something else for you to burn into your memory. The system has been hijacked from the people. It now functions for four primary purposes. 1, government control of persons and property. And 2, the receipt of revenue, either by lawful action or extortion. 3, the protection of the system that provides for points 1 and 2. 4, protection of persons who facilitate points 1, 2, and 3. If you are one of the uninitiated, that statement may seem somewhat reactionary to you. However, all one need do to learn that these statements are true is to stand your ground when the government comes for you and they are legally in the wrong. If you are a person of integrity and good faith, you will expect your government to sit down with you, read the law, and cease their unlawful actions against you. What you will not be prepared for is the attack that will be made upon you by your government in retaliation for your audacity. On the other hand, if your government is not accosting you, but you notice that it is acting in a manner that is contrary to the written law, if you bring that fact to the government's attention, the government will fall completely silent, never respond with anything substantive to your comments, observations, or requests for correction. The government generally uses the law as an offensive tool to compel the population to comply with its edicts. In most cases, the government could care less whether it is acting lawfully or whether it is even applying the law to the intended persons or property. The government only cares that there is a superficial appearance of legality. Americans can use the law as either an offensive tool or a defensive tool, depending upon the circumstance and your preference. I prefer to be the aggressor. Back to my proposition, most people despise lawyers. I think now since we've reviewed the entire system, we understand that we have become slaves to a system, but we're really not. We have an opportunity to be free if we understand what the law says, its true intent, and what our status is in relation to that law. Right now, if you look in your wallet and you find your driver's license, you'll see it's all spelled in capital letters. There is no law, there is no grammar, rule, or law that allows you to spell a proper noun in anything other than upper and lowercase letters. There is no legal requirement that can be found anywhere that authorizes that. What the government has created upon your birth is a legal fiction. People call it the straw man. People call it a juristic personality, which is probably more an accurate term for you. But it's not you. It's a legal fiction. It's a mask, an empty shell. But when you answer to that, you become it, subject to all the regulations and restrictions the government puts upon it, its creation. That's the system we're trapped into now. And the only thing that will get us out of that system is knowledge. Hopefully my classes will give you some of that knowledge.